Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. It's 8 o'clock, it's Thursday, and this is The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, and I'm sitting across the table from the lovely...
Bobby Bell.
Bobby Bell, who actually looks a lot like Russ Avison this evening. And in studio with us tonight, we have a lady that, when I think of her, I think of a couple adjectives. One is very, very, very successful, and the other is smart.
Which you brought her in to contrast me.
I did.
Yes.
I did, because, never mind. We have Miss Joyce Fitzpatrick with us tonight. And before we get started with Joyce, Russ, I wanted to say that last week I kind of like locked you out. I didn't mean to. I actually want to talk a little bit about what you do when you're not co-hosting with me.
I sit here and stare at you.
Well, that's true, but when you're not co-hosting with me,
yes.
What do you do?
Well, a couple things. I'm a dog trainer, and I have a boarding facility called All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. So it's like a doggy hotel, but it's more of a camp experience for the dogs. And we breed border collies, and we do sheep herding, and I'm a mentor for the Animal Behavioral College, and all that keeps me pretty busy. And then I waste my Thursday nights here. I mean, I come in and support you on Thursday nights.
But only one every 4 weeks.
That's right.
Okay. Joyce.
Yes.
So nice to see you.
It's fantastic to see you, Jim.
For those of you who don't know who Joyce Fitzpatrick is, let me give you a brief little summary. She is a screenwriter, a writer, a producer, a director. She is a participant in her stuff. I happen to have done one other radio show with Joyce in Santa Clarita, and I did a movie with Joyce called Kill Me. And we wanted to talk to Joyce tonight because she is smart, and I really, really, really think that people really need to hear what she has to say.
And she's not tough to look at.
And she's not hard to look at. So,
oh, thank you.
That being said, let's get into it. You have a special starting June 23rd on PBS, and it is called Sunshine, Noodles, and Me.
Yes.
It airs at 9 p.m., and then it airs again on the 28th at 9 p.m.
Yes.
And for you early birds, on the 24th at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Wow. I have to ask, because this title intrigues me, and I've come up with some pretty good titles. Where did this title come from?
Well, it is a really fun and unique title, and I have to admit that I didn't come up with that. I'm going to tell you who did. The actual star, Cheryl Ash Simpson.
Okay.
And the reason why I'm being honest, because she's going to listen to this, and she's going to call me and say, Joyce, you didn't give me credit for the title. But no, I would never do that. I wouldn't take credit from her. But actually, the documentary came out of a lot of different things. It's about health and wellness in regards to people, and not just women, having cancer. But basically, her story is about breast cancer. It's also a film about love, the love between her and her husband, and her family in general. She's a great, wonderful family. And it's also about a rekindling of our friendship, because we grew up together in Indianapolis.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting because she reached out to me through social media, which is also something that is unique, that a lot of people don't realize has really changed the face of how we communicate, period. You know, and so when you see the movie, all of that is encompassed. But anyway, basically, she states in the movie, as you'll see, and I don't know if I should tell you, I should make you watch the movie.
Well, I plan on watching it anyway.
Okay. Well, when you watch the movie, she actually explains where the title comes from. So, I don't know, would you want me to give you the spoiler alert?
No, don't do the spoiler alert. We'll find out. I mean, Russ and I are going to do the early show.
4 a.m. We've already made plans. He's making coffee and I'm bringing biscuits.
You know what? I think I'm going to do that too, just to say that my movie is on at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, my day starts at 3, so watching something at 4 in the morning is pretty simple.
Tell me, how difficult was it to get this onto PBS? I mean, that's a pretty prestigious platform for this.
You know, I was lucky and very fortunate and blessed and all of that, basically because I worked for the PBS affiliate in the past. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a fluke, and I try to keep relationships with people, and basically I ended up meeting and running into the station manager, but I didn't, you know, promote the film. Because I wasn't there for that reason.
Right.
I have friends that work at that affiliate, and I just went by to say hello. That was it. And basically, she reached out to me and asked me how I was doing in general, and I told her all the things that I'd been doing. So I told her I'd just finished this documentary that I shot in Malaysia, and she said, oh, you know, I'd love to see it. So, you know, I let her see it, and then basically she contacted me and said that they loved it.
Now, because PBS, I don't know as much about as I do with NPR, but mm-hmm. they're all independent yes. stations are part of the PBS or the group, and then they can choose what shows
Absolutely.
They're going to put on.
Yeah.
So how many do you see this is going to go out to?
You know, because of it being an affiliate, uh-huh. and I guess we can, I don't know, can we say the call letters?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's KLCS-TV, and I'm giving a shout out to all of my friends at KLCS.
Where are they located?
They're located on Temple Street.
Oh, they're here in Los Angeles?
Yes, it's in Los Angeles. It's actually, if you go to their website, they're the only affiliate in Los Angeles. Now, you know there's KCET.
Right.
But KCET, this was sort of a sister station to them. Mm-hmm. They mirror all of their programming. So anything that you see, it's like the same thing.
Sure.
So basically, they're a really great station.
Do they do the same fundraising?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. If you go to the website, there's just an individual entity. But yes, we do plan on franchising it to the other, you know, independent affiliates. Or the proper term is bicycling it to the other. You know, that's an older term, but that's the term that was used, you know.
So in the process of putting this together, mm-hmm. Initially you said your friend contacted you.
Yes. What ended up happening was, again, because we're all on social media, and, you know, people, I'm sure, I don't know if you gentlemen do that, you know, there might have been a girl in high school or someone that you took
I'm actually
prom.
Stalking one right now, yes.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So when you're stalking someone, mm-hmm. the easiest way to find them is on Facebook, right?
Right.
Or if you just want to find out about someone from your past. And so Cheryl happened to just, you know, thought of me. And we were fairly close because she used to come and hang out at my house as a teenager. And my older sister used to crack up and say, on my way out the door, I'd see you knuckleheads and just walk out, you know. So anyway, she decided to look me up. And when she went to my page and, you know, I kind of use Facebook as a promotional purpose.
Sure.
I don't really use it so much for family stuff. Some family things are on there. So she started seeing all of these things that I was doing and, you know, premieres and things like that. So she said, wow, you know, you're doing the Hollywood thing. So she reached out to me and I hadn't seen her in years, but she says, hey, you know, I'm living in Malaysia. And she kind of made it seem very casual at first.
Why don't you drop by for coffee?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I was extremely busy. We were doing all of the things that, you know, we were doing all these, you know, TV projects and, you know, just all these things. So I really didn't, you know, reach out to her or respond too quickly. So then she kept on, you know, messaging me. So finally I said, you know, what's going on with you? And so she said, you know, I live in Malaysia. I'm doing all these things. I want to talk to you about maybe doing some production. And I said, okay, in regards to what? And she says, you know, I'll call you and talk to you about it. So she happened to be flying into Los Angeles and for a stopover. And I met with her and she discussed about wanting to do something about her life because she travels extensively. And for her position that she had, she's an engineer and she had to do a lot of traveling. So we talked about that, but then right when I was walking her to the gate, to get, she goes, oh, by the way, I would love to talk to you about this stuff, but I found out that I have cancer. And I'm like, you're telling me
now?
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly the truth. That's exactly how it happened. We didn't even get into any of that. She just wanted to get my advice about making, you know, a TV show or movies and how to go about it because she didn't know. And then she tells me that. So I was like about to cry, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. And I said, you know what? I said, and it wasn't that I felt sorry for her or anything. It's just that I understood the importance.
Right.
And I said, anything you need me to do, I'm there. Whatever we need to do this, let's just do it. And then that kind of started our journey. And we really were, you know, kind of did a development thing for, you know, several months, you know, if not almost, you know, 6 to 8 months, because, you know, it's very difficult when you don't really have an entertainment background and you're trying to get information out of people. You can't just say, here, fill this form out.
Right.
You have to talk to them. And the fact that her and I went back so many years, I didn't even know what her life was like.
Sure.
And so I had to basically engage and find out what she was about as a person just to get to the point of, okay, now where can we go with this? And fortunately, my partner, Brian Shackelford, he's like a very good gauge for reality. You know, mm-hmm. He works in reality television, and he happened to be hearing our conversations and interviews, and I would run things across him. And he said, you know, he says, I know that Cheryl wants to do some type of show based in reality. He says, but, you know, her story really should be a documentary, because her life and what she's going through, because she found out 3 days before she was going to be married that she had cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
And the story not only, yeah, and even, you know, we have her husband's point of view of it as well. And can you imagine, I mean, you guys are, you know, men getting ready to be married, and all of a sudden your wife-to-be comes up and tells you that she's got cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can't deal with that. And that was kind of part of what we, you know, showcased in the documentary. So there were all these things that I had to learn about her. And then on top of while we were learning, it was such a great conversation, because I hadn't been back to my hometown, you know, since I came out to California to go to college. So I didn't even know, you know, what was going on. So she would talk about that, too. Like, do you remember this? And it's funny how your brain, you have so many, you know, crevices of information stuck in there that I started remembering all these things that I thought I'd forgotten as a child. So then when we started filming, we flew to Malaysia, which is, I don't know, have either of you gentlemen been?
I've never been to Malaysia. I've been to Asia.
Okay, you've been to Asia.
Yes.
So the flight is not...
No, it's very long.
It's very long. And I was cracking up because Brian and also our other cameraman, Ken Montgomery, they were just losing it, you know, on the plane. They were like, will it ever get dark? Because, you know, we were basically flying towards the sun
right.
the entire time.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't, like, get over the fact that it was never dark, ever, for almost, like, 2 days.
Well, you could primarily birth and raise a child in the flight to Malaysia.
You could. You pretty much could. You're right.
I'm
so sorry. Go ahead.
Don't want to shut you up, but we do have to take a few minutes or a couple second break here, so that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
And we'll be back in just a few. If you want to call and talk to Joyce, your number here is 818-602-4929, and we'll be back in about 30 seconds. Hi, we're back. We're in the studio with Joyce Fitzpatrick. Again, if you want to talk to her, the number is 818-602-4929. Moving away from Sunshine Noodles and Me for a minute, Joyce, you have done so much TV, and you have so many programs on the air and are working on more.
That's true.
Why don't you kind of clean it up for us?
Okay. Well, where do you want to start?
Well, wherever you want to start.
Man, I've been around for a long time. I don't know if I should say how long, but I
go ahead.
Well, to start off, it's very funny. I started doing, you know, like with anyone, you know, you're in college and you're doing all these things. And I wanted to be one of the first female music video directors. And I don't know if anyone knows this, but I am actually African-American. Can I say that?
Are you?
Say what you want. Yeah. This is talk radio.
Right. And so at that particular time, I wanted to be one of the first black females to do that. And I started directing music videos, and that was really fun. And when I did a film that, or rather a video that I was cutting, you know how there's the different PAL and NTC.
Right.
Well, one of the people that was in one of my videos happened to be from Switzerland, so I needed to give him a copy to send to his mother. So in the process, I ended up meeting these people at this production company, a very small production company. And if you want to talk about what people can do for their careers, I personally recommend not working for the huge entities like NBC and places like that. If you can find a really small production company, that's the best, because you're going to learn everything. You're going to learn how to pull cable. You're going to learn how to run camera. You're going to learn how to put makeup on. I mean, I did so many things when I worked with them. Mm-hmm. Like, they had me work on a show called A Laugh a Tear with Whoopi Goldberg, and where I was just like a PA, but I got an opportunity to, like, touch her face. I had to, like, do her makeup.
Did you touch her hair?
No, I didn't touch her hair. But
she'll kill for that.
Yeah. But she was really nice. And I got an opportunity when I worked for that company. I don't think it exists anymore, but I had the opportunity to meet so many people to this that are today considered the, forefathers for success among African Americans in film and TV. Mm-hmm. And as we were joking earlier, I kind of consider myself to be kind of a broke down version of Ava DuVernay. But anyway, but at that particular time, I had the opportunity of, are you gentlemen familiar with, and I don't know if I would date myself, but I don't care, Living Color?
Sure. Oh,
absolutely.
Everybody knows Living Color.
Yeah.
Well, I had the opportunity of being on the set of the producer's taping of Living Color. And, that's like before the public got to see it or anything. And to answer questions, no, Jennifer Lopez was not on the show at that time. They had a different group of dancers that were on the show. And Tommy Davidson, who's on the show, and Tommy Davidson was a regular, but at the time when I saw it, he was a warm-up person.
Really?
He was not on the show. So there are different people, that I got an opportunity to meet. Of course, Keenan.
Right.
And I met Damon. And I met Jim Carrey. And David Alan Greer. No, I think I'm saying it, David Alan Greer. Right.
Dag.
I know. And, that was a really cool opportunity. I was a very young kid. I was, young. But that was a great opportunity. And that kind of put me in the forefront of dealing with, celebrities and people and such. And I just got a lot of opportunity to meet a lot of different people. So anyway, from there, I decided to just start doing, different films. I worked on a black soap opera. I met the people that did the Generations. Do you guys, you probably don't remember that show. It was on NBC. But anyway, it was a fairly successful show. And the person who wrote the show wrote Young and the Restless.
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
So they wrote that show. And I got an opportunity not to necessarily work on that show, but another black soap opera. And then I did some other short films. And I've just kind of been all over the place, And then from there, I ended up getting, network stuff, where I ended up working for E! And that was interesting. And then, of course, BET. And I did some stuff for Animal Planet, believe it or not.
Sure.
And that was kind of a combination of writing. But I don't know if I should move forward, but I ended up getting, I would say, my very first writing job, because this is Writer's Block, right?
Right.
So,
I am not a writer.
Oh, you're not? You're not a writer?
No.
No, he's a dog trainer.
Oh, okay. Yes, dog trainer.
He lives with dogs.
Oh, okay. Well, when I got my very first writing job, it was kind of a fluke. What happened was I did this. I always have a very vivid imagination, or I have a vivid, not always have. And I love animals, so things tend to be about animals for me.
Sure.
So I have cats, and I'm not a crazy cat lady, but I do have cats.
So you say.
I've had dogs, too. But at the time, I had cats, and I was, in a relationship where I was actually in a, what do you want to call it, matriarchal or married or whatever the term is. Don't know anymore. But
My husband. Now, was this a human or a cat?
He was human. Oh, okay. Unfortunately, he was yeah. human. But he loved cats, too. So anyway, I used to take my cats and make them walk. You know how you can hold them up and make them walk? You guys don't know what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I do, but I could never stop done with cats.
No, no.
You can do this.
Hey, listen, it was great having you in tonight. Yeah,
hey, just go ahead and close the door on your way out.
All right, all right. I know, sound like I said, crazy cat lady.
So you made your cats walk.
Yes, and that was what prompted the sketch, because I would make them walk, and I would actually say, I'd make them walk towards you for fun and go, uh-huh. I'm going to kill you.
Oh, you did that?
Yeah, I used to do that.
Oh, gosh.
That was me. And so, you know, they liked the skit. They liked the idea. And next thing I know, I got flown to Universal out in Florida to watch them tape it live. And I was just completely shocked.
Well, just to fill everybody in, I told Jim about this one earlier, and I just watched this yesterday. But the scene starts, it's in a living room, and somebody knocks at the door, and a woman in a robe comes to the door and answers, and it's her date at the door. She says, you know, I'm not quite ready, but why don't you sit down here on the couch? And, oh, and this is my cat, Fluffy, or whatever the cat's name was. And she goes off, and the cat looks at the guy and goes, I'm going to kill you. And then he's like, oh, this cat's not right. You know?
Right, right.
And so it's the whole story about how it evolves with the cat. And it's pretty funny.
Well, thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. And it's funny. Everybody really likes that thing. I've played it at parties, you know, where you just let it run on a loop, right? And but people, for some reason, they really like it. And we just thought it was so hilarious. But the interesting thing about that is there was a team of writers. And that particular show, I don't know if you know about that show, but the person who created that show, I have to give them credit. It's Michael Wilson, and he is the son of Dave Wilson.
Oh.
And Dave Wilson, who directed
Saturday Night Live. Yes.
So that was like this great opportunity.
Oh, no kidding.
And they wanted to do, like, to have like a little series of it where the cat, like, we're going to have her take him on the plane. You
it's kind of like the, what was the one on Saturday Night Live? The Toons is the driving cat.
And you know what? It's so funny. That's the reason why he wanted to do it, because he says, now we can have our own version of Toons, and it's nothing like Toons, right?
Right.
So it was a really great opportunity. That was kind of my first foray. It was a very surreal moment, and I'm sure other writers that have gone through that have felt the same thing, where I was standing, especially when it's live. You know, it's one thing when you're sitting in the writer's room and you're going over the script and, you know, things are just, you know, people are just trying to figure it out, and then you're doing a live to tape or whatever. It's such a surreal experience to stand there and watch all of these people actually get it and actually laugh on cue. Mm-hmm. So you can't fake that, you know. And I tell people, I say, you know, there was no laugh track. I was actually there, and I actually saw people cracking up about this cat, you know?
Oh, it was funny. It was very funny.
Thank you.
I had a good time with it.
So this was the precursor to Animal Control.
Oh, absolutely. And Animal Control kind of came to pass. Brian and I, when we started, you know, deciding to work together, this is, of course, after Mary, but my other documentary, he said, let's come up with a project to do. And I said, okay, what do you want to do? So we were kind of going over all these different things. And I don't know, since I wanted to be a veterinarian when I came out here originally to go to college. But
really?
Absolutely. It's very funny. And my best friend, she said, her name is Betty Brandley. And she goes by BJ. But Betty, we would talk about things. And whenever there was a question about a film mm-hmm. or a TV show, everyone would always ask me. And I would know the answer. Like, I know some of the most obscure, like, stupid things that people would never want to know. And so when I was studying this, she says, why are you going to school to be a veterinarian? Why don't you do TV and film? Because that seems like what you really want to do. And I was like, no, it's not that I really want to do that. I loved animals. But I think my problem is I'm too compassionate. Because I had gotten so far in that, you know, animals are generally, as they say, considered our food. And when I started doing meat utilization, mm-hmm. That was it for me. You know, I didn't enjoy putting, like, needles inside a pig's stomachs. And it was too much for me.
Sure.
So,
you know, a doctor friend of mine, mm-hmm. Every time I go to see him at his office, he's always telling me about some new animals that he has. One time he had this bird, a sun conure, in his office. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, come here, you got to see this. Well, I said, you know, you have all this passion for animals. Why didn't you become a vet? And he said, you know, I can sit down with a human being and I can say, you know what? You've got cancer. You got 6 weeks to live. You should get your affairs in order. And it's not a fun time, but they can process that and understand it. He says the animals don't get it. And I could not deal with having to work with these poor things that don't get what's going on. I thought that was a really interesting viewpoint.
It is. It's sort of like for me, it was more of like I said, having that compassion. I'm too compassionate. And, right. and I've always been that way. My family will tell you, you know, I just always felt too much compassion. I just lost my oldest cat like at the beginning of the year, and it devastated me. I mean, I was just devastated. So it is one of those things. But to move on to what we were saying about animal control, how it came about. As I said, I started wanting to do that for a living when I came out here to go to college. So I got a job working for an animal shelter. And I worked in all facets of an animal shelter. I was like the, you know, office person to deal with all of the crazy people that come in and say, you know, you're killing all these animals. And then I dealt with the compassionate person that would come to adopt. And then I also worked in the actual kennels where I cleaned the kennels. I, you know, had to deal with the animals. I'd given shots, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. I've even dealt with euthanasia, which I didn't really enjoy, but I had to do that. So I know the ins and outs. And I also did canvassing, which, do you guys know what canvassing is?
I know what it is when you canvas for, like, in sales.
It's sort of the same thing, sort of. It's almost like you have to go out and ticket people.
Do you know they did that in CME 1 year, yeah.
That's what that I did that too. So with all of that experience, I said, you know what? Wouldn't it be funny to, like, make fun of that? And not in a negative way against those people, because they are actually good people. But mm-hmm. just to show that side of it, what you have to do. And then we thought we'd take the television part and put that in there, too, to show from the producer's side of trying to do a reality show about that. And that's where animal control came from.
So is the premise then that it's kind of looking at the people trying to do a reality show about animal control?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we you know, we're still kind of tweaking it. You know, we did it and we like it, but we feel like, you know, we've shot so much and we feel like, you know, we want to do more with it. And we're contemplating other avenues with it at this time, like maybe doing animation, something mm-hmm. like that. And because we had so much fun doing it, it was fun. It really was.
Well, I've watched an episode on YouTube. It's funny.
Yeah, it's funny. We go over the top a little bit, but that's what you have to do, you know?
Well, we're going to take another real quick break, and we'll be back in about 30. And we're back, and we're in the studio tonight with Joyce Fitzpatrick. If you'd like to talk to Joyce, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Before we get into one of the topics that's one of my favorites with you, your bio, and it's so great because you're on like four or five networks, and you've got shows spread all over the place. And I just think that's great. Why don't we just touch really lightly on that, because it's interesting.
Well, some of it is, you know, I mean, we've had opportunities, and some of those opportunities aren't there anymore, but it's those things have aired. We are kind of all over the place, because between the two of us, there's my production company, Flat Cat, and then Brian's, which is Tunnel Vision Entertainment. We've both worked in, if you put together all of our, you know, entities that we've worked on separately and together, it's a lot. But with E, you know, that was something that came about, you know, kind of out of the blue as well. And I enjoyed a long tenure with E. I'm no longer with them, but it was a great tenure. And the same with BET. I worked on several shows with BET all at one time. Those shows have gone on to, you know, TV, you know, whatever it is, right, heaven, right. You know. But right now we're sort of like in the phase of shopping things. So that's kind of where we're at. It's like we're creating all of this content, and we're looking for avenues to put that content on. So we're kind of revisiting all of our old relationships with those people.
Sure.
And that's kind of where we're at with that. So.
Now, years ago, you had your first, not I think it was your first documentary.
Yes, I would say it would be my first.
Was a documentary you made called Discovering Mary. Mm-hmm. And it's about Mary Fields, who is also known as Stagecoach Mary.
Yes.
And she was the first female Teamster to carry mail for the U.S. Postal Service. Please tell us the story of how you got into Discovering Mary, because it's fascinating.
And by the way, you have to tell the story, because if any of you want to watch this, you can't.
You can't watch it.
I searched for 2 days trying to find out where can I review this film.
5 years ago, Joyce promised me a DVD on Discovering Mary, and I have yet to have it.
Oh, my God. Now he's calling me out.
I am calling you.
It's okay. Well, the documentary does exist, so, you know, I'm not going to go to jail or anything.
Kind of like your boyfriend exists, right?
Yeah, no, it really does exist, and it is completed, and we did have screenings, but everyone loved it, and it was a private screening, so it really hasn't been put out yet for like tons and tons of people to see it. But I really enjoyed the screenings that we did have, because people really gave me their honest opinion, and that's what those screenings are for. So that way you can kind of decide whether you need to tweak something, or you can, you know, leave something in or take something out. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's very entertaining to watch, but I want to add more to it. And I've been told that from other, you know, people in my profession. They said, you know, you did a fantastic job, but there's some things that, you know, you should cut down this and add more of that. You know, like, people liked me on camera, but the gentleman who is sort of like, to me, the glue of Mary, that unfortunately people aren't ever going to probably get to see or know, is in the documentary. Anyone or anything, like if you Google Mary now, it's funny, when I started the journey with that project, you could find nothing. And I mean literally nothing.
Now she's all over the internet.
Exactly. And I take credit for that. I don't care what anybody says. I know that the reason that that's there is because of me.
Well, tell, what was it so intriguing about Mary and her life that drew you to it and wanted you to do this?
It's kind of a weird story, because I was
right up your alley.
Yeah, very much so. I was living in Pasadena, and this is on the documentary too, which you probably saw that on the trailer. I don't know where I went into this thrift store that just happened to be. It was like one of those little quaint, not a like junk thrift store, but a really nice little thrift store. And I picked up a copy of Donna Summers on the cover of Ebony, and that's another person that I really like too. Donna Summers is a really great person. And I flipped through it, and I saw this story called Black Mary. And I'm like, what is this? And when I read it, I was like, I literally closed the magazine like I had just discovered, you know, $1 million or something. And I just looked around and said, why has no one done a movie about this? I could not stop the internal, you know, thought process of wanting to know more. I just could not stop. And I, at that point, again, the internet wasn't a big deal. So I would take my own personal time, you know, I could have done anything, but I would go and sit in the library and try to look her up and try to look up all this information. And there was nothing, just a couple of little lines. And I was like, well, this is crazy. So I just kept on digging. And then I would, whenever I'd find a little something, I just thought like I had just, you know, had like, you know, some kind of epiphany. I was so excited. So anyway, basically I, you know, just kept trying to find out about her and why. I think I can't really put a finger on it. You know, our lives are sort of similar. You know, I love the big outdoors. I love that. And I don't have children. She didn't have children. I thought maybe that might have been the connection.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly think, and I had mentioned this in another interview that Jim and I were both in, there was like a haunting, I think, because I couldn't explain it. You know how you just get, like they say, a burr in your saddle and you just can't stop thinking about something?
Which incidentally has happened to me before. And, a burr under my saddle.
In your saddle, right. So that was kind of what prompted it. And when I really started on my journey, it just kept building and building. And when I finally went there, I actually, you know, a good friend of mine, Connie Douglas, I was talking to her about Mary. And anytime I would ask people about her, they didn't know anything about her, right?
Sure.
And when I asked her, she says, oh, I know who she is. And I was like, I was just floored. I was like, you know who she is? How do you know? She says, oh, I go to Montana all the time. And I was like, really? And she goes, yeah. And they talk about her in Montana all the time. I'm like, are you kidding me? So she says, you need to go to Montana.
I was thinking,
like,
so you got on a plane.
Exactly. And it was funny. I called and said I was coming, but I didn't give any date or anything.
Did you call like all of Montana and just say I'm on my
well,
way?
There's only one phone in Montana.
Exactly. Oh, okay. No, I called Great Falls. I called Cascade because that's the city she's from, is Cascade. Mm-hmm. And it's a very small city, but I didn't know that at the time. So I called and said, you know, I'm a producer and director and I'm going to be coming there. But I didn't give them a date. I didn't say anything about that. So when I finally got there, it was just me and my camera guy. We did everything. We were sound. We were everything.
Right.
So when we got there, you know, I had a list of places I wanted to go, which aren't that many places in Cascade to go anyway. But I didn't even know the names of the people I needed to talk to. There was just a couple of names. I had the librarian's name, and because she's the person that I would always talk to. So when I got there, there's a scene in the documentary that I think might have been on the trailer, was when we walked into their city hall. It's a very small building, and you know, in small cities, it's like that.
Sure.
Walked in and they were like, oh, can we help you? And it was very funny, a funny little story prior to that. We're driving around town, right? And again, I'm African-American. No, you don't see any African-Americans at all. But we didn't freak out about that, right? So we pull up to this little cafe and we get out. And the people are looking out the window at us like. And when we go in, they're all sitting there like, who is this? And then the woman comes up. She goes, can I help you? And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to find the library. Right?
Yeah.
And it was funny. She said, sure, just go around the corner and this and that. So when we got in the car and drove, before we got to the entrance, they were like, oh, yeah, they called us and told us that you were coming.
Wow.
So that was funny. But anyway, I have to say and give a shout out to the people of Cascade if they ever, ever hear this. That was the nicest group of people that I have ever met in my entire life. And I know with all of the uproar of everything that's going on in the world today, and particularly in the United States, and mm-hmm. particularly with African Americans, they treated me like a queen. I never felt so comfortable. The treatment was so good that I actually called a realtor while I was there and actually got a listing of homes because I loved Montana. I loved Great Falls. It just gave me such a peace that I don't think I've ever had, even in my own hometown. And my hometown is great too, Indianapolis, Indiana. It's a beautiful
sure.
place. But Montana, I mean, there's nothing like it. Hmm. Nothing. I don't care what anybody says. But the winters are harsh.
Yes, they are.
And then that posed the question that I posed to them. I was like, how come there aren't any African Americans living here? And they said, it's probably because of the cold weather.
They're the smart ones. They knew not to be
yeah.
here over the
right,
winter time.
Right.
They moved to Miami.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience. And when we met the gentleman who was the only living witness that was still alive at the time, I think he was 94 or 96.
And he actually had met her?
He grew up, yeah. He was a child.
Uh-huh.
No, and she used to babysit him and his older brother.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he referred to her in the documentary. There's some things we cut out that mm-hmm. I was recommended to cut back in.
Mm-hmm.
He referred to her, which everyone referred to her, with a certain, you know, term in front of her name.
Mm.
The N-word.
Sure. Oh.
And I'm going to go there. But it wasn't in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing. And when I was interviewing him, my camera guy tells me later on, he goes, I thought Joyce is going to lose her mind. Because when he was talking about her, he referred to her as N. Mary.
You can say it, by
yeah.
the way.
Well
yeah, I'm not going to say it. But, you know, he referred to her as N. Mary.
Right.
You know, that N-I, G, whatever, right. whatever. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even flinch. And what was interesting is when I went to get the interview with him, his son was the one that set the interview up for us. And his son referred to her as that when he first met me. And I was just like, what? You know, but I didn't react. So after the interview, the son actually pulled me to the side and he actually thanked me. And he says, you know, I really want to commend you because you didn't get upset about my dad.
It was all about the context.
That's what he said.
Sure.
And I said, and I knew that. I was smart. And to me, getting his testimony was so important. He could have cussed me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I still would have said, give me that information.
Yeah, give me
the
interview.
That's how much I loved doing it.
Okay, we're going to take another real quick break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes, or a couple seconds, or whatever. This is the Writer's Block. We're in the studio with Joyce Fitzpatrick, and we've been talking about Stagecoach Mary and the documentary that Joyce made a couple years back that Russ has reminded us of. Nobody has a copy, and nobody can get a copy, and you can't see the documentary.
Yes.
So I guess we just have to go off Joyce's word about what it's about. But if you want to talk to Joyce, the number here is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. And before we continue with that, I'd just like to remind everybody that next week we have Margaret Brownlee here, which is, she's a wonderful author, and she writes romance westerns, and she's got a new series out that's a female detective back in the 1800s, so she's a very, very, very interesting woman. And Joyce, take it away.
Well, that's wonderful, because she is a great person. If you want to go back into the Mary thing, and I want to move forward from that as well.
Absolutely.
It does exist. And like I said, that is one of the things for this year. Like I say, don't talk about something you're not going to do. I do plan on getting it out there because I've had so many people ask me, you know, when are we going to see when? And it's just one of those things for me. It's like my own personal thing. And I think I kind of feel like if I get finally just give it out there, that I won't own it anymore.
Well, you know, that's real funny you should say that because I do the same thing when I'm writing a book.
Yes.
You can only rewrite them so many times before it, not only do you get redundant, but it's you don't want to give it up anymore. It's a piece of you, and as soon as it's on paper and behind covers and people are actually reading it, it's no longer yours. Now it just belongs to the universe.
And that's exactly the way I feel about it. But it's time to let my baby fly, so I understand.
Tell me, just out of curiosity, mm-hmm. from the time that you first had the idea, the spark of doing this, till the time you completed the documentary, what was the time frame?
Very, very quickly. The minute I thought about well, quickly to a point. Again, I did so much research and there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That I just kind of kept it alive inside. And I would say about 2 to 3 years it took me to finally go and do it. But it was just a long process for me because I couldn't find any information. And then there was just so many components to her. And I've met so many people that have kind of ventured into that part of her life and also tried to do films as well. I had an opportunity to meet Pam Grier, who I hold in very high esteem. I know, do you gentlemen know who she is?
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody knows who
Pam Grier is.
I know. She's a beautiful woman. She's very talented, and I had the opportunity to meet her through another friend of mine, a producer named Gail Choice, who's another great friend of mine, and she went to an event that Pam Grier was at promoting her book that she had written. And at this event, Pam Grier raised the question, which is strange, too. I think sometimes it was meant to be because she asked all the people at this event, have you ever heard of Stagecoach Mary?
Really?
Yes. And my friend was sitting there, and she said everyone was looking like, you know, deer in the headlights. Like, no, we don't know who it is. And she says, well, you should know who she is. I tried to make a movie about her years ago. And my friend raised her hand, and she says, you know, what's going on with you? And she says, well, you asked if anyone had ever heard of her. I have. And the reason is because my friend did a documentary about her. And she's like, oh, really? She's, I want to meet your friend. So my friend called me up, and I actually went to, she was having a book signing. And I went to the book signing and introduced myself, and we hit it off. And she said, you know what? You really have been there. I don't even think she's ever been there. Because when I started rattling off things, she was looking at me like, wow, you really have been to Cascade. And there's a few other people. I met Sherry Belafonte. Well, I didn't meet Sherry Belafonte. Let me rephrase that. We exchanged information. I exchanged information with her assistant. Mm-hmm. And I want to interview her. If she does happen to hear this, I have no intention of doing anything that you wouldn't want done, but I would love to talk to you to add you to what we've done. Because she wanted to make a film about Mary as well. So
I'd like to, I can't go through this the entire 50 minutes without mentioning that Bobby Jean tonight is in Newhall with the Out West sponsored music series
yes.
tonight.
Yes.
And I hope they're having a great time. We certainly are here. And you have about 3 minutes left, three and a half. So why don't you tell us what you're doing, where you're going to be, give us email addresses, Facebook pages.
Okay, well, I wanted to touch briefly on the documentary that I'm working on right now. It's called The Color of Medicine. And it's called The Color of Medicine, The Story of Homer G. Phillips Hospital. And I don't know if you gentlemen know about that.
I have heard something about that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And even with that, how that came about, to try to scrunch it into a few seconds. Another story that came to me via my social media and via my relationships with people. A doctor that I grew up with who lived across the street from me. I used to babysit his daughter, his youngest daughter. And I was a kid, I mean, a real kid, and years have passed, and he reached out to me on Facebook and said, I would love for you to tell my story. And I'm like, well, what story is that, Dr. Robinson? You know, because I had no idea that he was involved in this. And then when he told me his story, I was floored. His father was one of the first graduates of the Homer G. Phillips Hospital, which is one of only three hospitals that existed for African-American doctors in training in 1937. I couldn't believe it. And he ended up following in his father's footsteps to become a physician as well from that same hospital.
At that time, if you were black, did you have to go to a segregated
yes.
college for this?
Yes. You had to go to a hospital, yeah. And his father was fortunate enough, he was actually going to go, him and his colleagues, which were actually going to do a reenactment in the documentary, his father gets on the train, dressed in a suit with his other colleagues, and the Red Hat, that's what they called him, Red Cap, I'm sorry,
Red Caps, yeah.
was a black gentleman, and he said, where are all you guys going dressed up in these, you know, suits? And he says, we're about to go work at this other hospital. We're so excited to do our medical training. And he goes, you know what? He says, there's a brand new hospital in St. Louis, Missouri, and that's for black people, and they need doctors bad. And he said his father made the decision right then and there on that train to go to St. Louis. And
My
he
goodness.
Never looked back.
Wow.
It is such a
great story.
It is. And I cannot wait to get into it. And we're in the development stage right now. So that's what I'm doing right now. And, of course, other things, scripts. I have a horror script that
you
I'm
and
trying
Court
to
Joyner.
Complete. Oh, my God. It's great, though. And I don't want to say the name of it because then, you know, there I'll be, you know, stuck with, you know. Having
yeah.
to prove
yeah.
it.
But okay, we got about a minute left.
Okay.
Give us your information.
Okay, if you want to find out about Discovering Mary, we're on Facebook. Just go to Discovering Mary. And also for the Homer G. Phillips Project, everything is listed under the name. So The Color of Medicine, Homer G. Phillips, is also on Facebook. And also Sunshine Noodles and Me is on Facebook as well. And we also have Twitter and Instagram. And Identity Confirmed, which I didn't even get to talk about. Fantastic, you know, sci-fi.
Very funny clip.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a kind of a scary clip with that one, Identity Confirmed. But it's a great piece, and that's also on social media under Identity Confirmed. So all of those projects are all, if anyone just sends me a message, I'm at Joyce, you know, Fitzpatrick on Facebook, and I'm also on Twitter at Producer Joyce. And so it's at Producer Joyce. If you send me a request, I'll send you all the information.
But she won't send you the CD of Discovery.
And your MS Rewrite at AOL.com?
Yes. Yes, and at msrewrite @gmail.com.
@gmail.com.
Well. Mm-hmm. And I have, like I said, my Twitter and Instagram, I think, is Fitzpatrick Joyce.
Well, it's been a wonderful, wonderful time with you.
Oh,
thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Will you come back?
I certainly will if I'm invited.
Well, I would think you'd be invited. And I think, Russ, thanks for filling in for Bobby Jean.
I thoroughly enjoyed meeting you. This has been enlightening, and I'm looking forward to your PBS special.
I'll
be watching that.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
At 4 in the morning.
Pleasant meeting you. I know.
And with that, we are done for the evening. Y'all have a good evening.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.